And away we go. It is Friday morning, Getaway Friday, August the 6th, 2021, 15 minutes past the hour here on a Friday morning. You're tuned into The Pastor Spot, a weekly radio ministry of Community Christian Fellowship that can be heard live every Friday morning from 11:10 a.m. till 12 p.m., repeated on Sunday morning, 8:10 a.m. until 9 a.m., and then on Wednesdays from 3:10 until 4 p.m. Also, catch archives, episodes of the show on the website, www.wgh1071.com. Go under Program Archives, and The Pastor's Spot is the first show under there. Also, don't forget the Community Christian Fellowship Sunday service now airs on this station every Sunday starting at 12:15 p.m. And now we turn to the host of the show, Pastor Steve Whitaker.
How are you today, Scott?
Good.
Good to have you here today, and good to have you, Frank, here today with me.
Good morning.
And we're going to have a great show today. How's that? I want to give you a little bit of news about Community Christian Fellowship right now. We are ending. Yesterday was our last day of the summer lunch program, but I want to talk to you a little bit about that. I didn't get a chance to talk about that last week. We averaged in a little over 30 meals a day to the kids and elderly people in the community that came voluntarily to get a meal. And our high day was 59 one day, and that was a hot cooked lunch every day. And, of course, there were some days we had cold cuts and whatnot. But, you know, it was great to have that service to be able to do that all summer. And now with getting ready to head back to school, yesterday was our last day, and actually I think maybe Shirley cooking everything can take a break now and get some more, do some of her summer stuff, but I'm sure she'll be completely busy. But it was great to be able to do that and serve the community and help people. And we are still continuing right now our Wednesday morning coffee hour. Well, it's coffee 2 hours from 6:30 to 9:30. I guess that's three, isn't it? Where we have free coffee on the corner there at the church. Coffee and cold coffee, hot coffee, tea, and muffins. And it's just a nice for people to be able to stop in and get something on the way to work. I wish we could do it every day, and we may try to figure that out at some point because it really has been a great service to the community. And then, of course, one thing I didn't mention again last week also is Frank, who is with us today. Frank has a ministry that he is going to kick back off again here real shortly.
Yes.
At Primrose, actually doing a Sunday message at Primrose and also having access to see people as needed at Primrose. And I'm going to give Frank just a second to talk a little bit about that ministry, if you would.
Thank you, Pastor Steve. Actually, it's a very vital ministry. So many times, various nursing homes I've gone into, it just helps with the patients, the residents who are in there who have been, for some reason or other, not able to get hold of the relatives, or, you know, maybe the relatives just don't have the time to come by and see each other, or their own pastors. Unfortunately, a lot of times, nursing home, when it comes to local churches, since it doesn't really, there's an attitude that the local church just doesn't want to get involved with nursing home ministries because it doesn't really bring, unfortunately, anything or anybody into the church. But it's a very vital part of the gospel to get out and to help relieve some of the suffering and worries of some of the people who are in nursing homes. And I've seen some large changes in people during that time. A lot of times somebody might be comatose to the point of not talking, but you happen to sing an old hymn, and you'd be surprised at the response. Even if it's just a glitter of the eye or the smile will show up on their face, even though you think the person can't understand, they're very much a vital part of a person's life.
Yeah, thank you, Frank, and I'm so glad you do that ministry. I find that you know, with a lot of the senior citizens, that's one of the things they're so afraid of when it comes to going to a nursing home. Are they just going to put me away and no one's going to see me? And when they can have a local pastor or someone that they feel they know or cares about them, it really makes a big difference. And I think that you're right. A lot of times they're the forgotten part of our society. They're a forgotten part of our communities. But truly, if we're doing the job as we're supposed to as a local church, they're just as vital as part of the community as those people that are in the pew on every Sunday. At one time, we had talked about actually doing a shuttle service to church, and we realized that it would probably be far easier and better to meet them where they are than to get a lot of them out because of the struggles so many of them have coming in and out. I remember I was doing a Bible study one morning at the nursing home, and someone decided they were going to get up and walk to the next room, and immediately it went down, and I had to grab them from behind. Well, they weighed more than I did, and next thing I knew, I was just trying to ease them to the ground. Well, that's one of the reasons it's very hard to take them from one place to the next, because you can end up with a real problem there. But one thing I've noticed when I've been to the services with Frank, and a couple times I've done it myself, is that they love it when you open that songbook, and even especially if someone's there to play the piano. And so many of them know the songs, and they just brighten right up. And it's just such a blessing to be able to do that. And I think one thing that is true about that is there is no financial type donation that goes back to the church from that. And I think the churches today, many of them, are so strapped for money that that's just one more extension they don't want to go. But I think they're missing a great opportunity, because the personal and the spiritual and the blessing in that way far outweighs anything financial. And I firmly believe that if we do what God calls us to do, He's going to take care of us, and He's going to take care of the financial end of it. So I think that's a huge blessing. You know, one of the passages that I wanted to read this morning is in Acts chapter 1, and it says, while he was with them, this is verse 4, while he was with them, he commanded them not to leave Jerusalem, but to wait for the Father's promise, which he said, you have heard me speak about, for John baptized with water, but you'll be baptized with the Holy Spirit in a few days. So when they had come together, they asked him, Lord, are you restoring the kingdom of Israel at this time? And he said to them, it is not for you to know the times or periods that the Father has set by his own authority, but you will receive power when the Holy Spirit has come on you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and all Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth. And that's something I wanted to talk about just briefly this morning, is the Holy Spirit guiding us and leading us. And a lot of people, especially those that are not Christians, that are outside of the faith, when you start talking about the Holy Spirit, they get a little bit hinky. You know, then you're thinking, oh boy, here we go. Here goes these nutty people, and they're going to, you know, call down spirits, and they're going to get all whooped up and all these kind of things. But that is not at all what Jesus was talking about here. He was talking about the third person of the Trinity, which is the Holy Spirit, and them empowering our lives when we believe in Him, and guiding and directing and nudging and giving us that direction as we need it. And one good example of it with the disciples, with the apostles, as we saw, was that these men, following the crucifixion of Christ, were very scared. They didn't know what was going on. They had fully believed that he was going to restore the kingdom of Israel right there and be a king on a throne, and they were all going to have places in that. And that was not the intention at all. The restoration was for a future time. But it was interesting that, as scared as they were, once they had the power of the Holy Spirit in their lives, these men preached the gospel and preached Jesus until their death. And most of them were a martyr's death. All, I think, but one died a martyr. And so that power was within them. But when I talk about the Holy Spirit leading and guiding us, I think the great comfort in that is to know that when you're trusting what you believe in your heart that God is saying to you and directing you, you don't have to put so much pressure on yourself. If the apostles had to put all the pressure of the ministry that lied ahead of them and the outcome on themselves, they would have collapsed immediately. But knowing that God was guiding them and leading them, they knew that he was ultimately in control of the outcome. And resting in that outcome, I think that it gave them great power and great strength to do that. And I think that in our day and age, with all that we struggle with everything about us, if we can rest in that, and if we know that God is guiding and leading, and He ultimately has the sovereign say-so in what happens, I think that is a great, great rest to me. I've talked to so many people recently that are so down, are so depressed, or say, oh no, here comes this whole virus thing again, or, you know, is my work going to shut down, is the government going to collapse, you know, the list just goes on and on and on. But, you know, Scott, there's certain things that we can control, and there's things that we can't control. And I think it's so important sometime to relinquish those things that we can't control to those that can. And I mean, I'm talking about not just people in power and places, but also to God, to relinquish those things to Him that we can't have any power over. And it gives us such a peace of our heart, in our heart, and we can go out every day and we can live our lives knowing that, look, I can control what's within my ability to control. And me personally, as a believer in Jesus Christ, I ask Him to guide that control every day so that it's not just me making my decisions, but Him prodding me to the decisions that I should make. But with that gives me a great rest, and of course also gives me a great peace. And through that, I don't have to carry this heavy, unbelievable burden. And I think that even as a pastor, I have to sometimes really crank that up a notch, because I was telling my doctor this morning, I was in to see my doctor about some things, and we were talking about stress. Stress is a huge thing, especially as you get older, because what happens is, you know, stress, finally your body starts saying, I've had enough of this stuff, you know, and there's consequences of that. But I said, you know, it's interesting, because my phone, as Frank will tell you, Frank says, why don't you throw that thing away sometimes? Because it rings a lot, and a lot of messages come through. And there's not a day goes by that there isn't at least one to two people that will contact me with something that is, to them, is the biggest thing in the world. And it really is. It may be an illness. It may be a financial thing, a relational thing. You know, just the other day, I switched gears and had to run to Marion General because a lady had fallen, and she's, I mean, that's a huge deal to her. But my point being that if I had to take all that on me and worry about all that on me, you'd lose your mind. But, you know, you do what you can, you pray about it, and you give it to God. And through that, it's amazing how many people you can love and you can serve. Sure. You know, if Frank left the nursing home every week and he had just buried with the burdens of all those people and what they were going through, he couldn't get up to function the next day and do the things he needs to. But we have to be able to take those things and categorize them with God, as we should, and continue to be that blessing. Because the next person that calls, and the next person that you run into, you've got to be that positive person for them too. And you can't be buried with all of the burdens that we carry sometimes. So I think that it's important that we understand that God is there to carry stuff for us, and we don't have to worry about weighing ourselves down, especially with things we can't control. And I think that a lot of our problems are worrying about things we can't control. I had heard a real interesting take. You're going to like this, because I know you listen to a lot of different talking heads sometimes, just to hear what's going on out there. And this guy was, he was a pastor of a church, not a real huge church, but Abraham Hamilton was interviewing him yesterday. And Abraham Hamilton, of course, is not only a radio talking host, but he's also a bivocational pastor. And he was interviewing this guy, and this guy was talking about listening to talk radio. And he was talking about listening to different people on talk radio. And he hit the nail on the head, and I think he was dead right with this. He said that if you're listening to something, that to someone, that is going to do nothing but spark conversation, but not spur you to positive action, turn them off. Now think about that a minute. A lot of times we listen to things and we can get all worked up about our opinion and what they're saying or what they're telling us. But in all honesty, all that's going to do is cause us to talk a lot and not do anything, which is wasted time and even can be wasted conversation because it's the same thing over and over again. But if somebody is doing something to spur you to a positive action where you're actually accomplishing something in their rhetoric or whatever they're saying, that's the person you want to listen to because they're helping you to be productive. And I think he hit the nail on the head.
Well, it's interesting. Nothing to do with controversy, but, you know, the trade and swap programs, which have been on local radios for years, never make any money because they usually don't have sponsors, because why would you for a trade and swap show? They don't charge anybody to put things on trade and swap. But they're fun. And, you know, 90% of the people who listen to those shows have never sold anything on those shows in their life. They just like to listen to them. And that's always been my philosophy on all talk radio is that if the person speaking, even if they're a nice person, is saying everything you agree with, find another show. Because if you already know what you know, try to know what you don't know. I mean, it's perfectly fine that you like them and you agree with them, but if that's the only thing you're listening to, that's problematic.
Something else that he said on that show that I thought was pretty neat, too, and I hear what you're saying. I agree. Because, you know, you want to know where everyone else is at. And I guess it's when you listen to everything they do, it's just kind of an entertainment in a way, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just dead entertainment. But one other thing he was promoting was a thing that he talked about, and he called it county, not country. And I thought it was interesting because he was talking about if you're going to work and try to do something, try to do something that on within a realm in which you can actually make a difference. I mean, we can hoot and holler and carry on all day long about what's being said on a national level. But the truth is, Scott, I think that you and I both know that you, Scott Spears, and me, Steve Whitaker, and Frank Robinson, are not going to do a lot to affect anything nationally. We can't do it. Well, if we want to be effective, wouldn't it make sense to then do something on a local level to where we can actually make a difference and be effective? But most people in what they do are going to listen. Most people are going to listen to what is going on nationally, and that's what they're going to talk about, and that's what they're going to get excited about or not excited about, and that's what they're excited about.
Well,
you know what I mean?
I'm just curious, even on the local level lately, that it, and I talk about this with a lot of the local employees as well as elected officials, is that it has never been so political locally ever in any time, in certainly modern times, as it has been in the last 3 or 4 years. You can go to city council now and watch them vote down party lines. That never happened. Never used to happen. 9 times out of 10, city council passed things pretty unanimously because you knew what you were going to get through. Mm-hmm. You can go up there right now and you can watch them vote down party lines on just about every issue. They voted down party lines on hiring a police officer. Now, who in the world does not, and
that's
that does
crazy.
Affect your local.
That's crazy. But I think that's something that we have to address.
And we can.
That's something that you and I
can
address and say, wait a minute, what are you guys doing?
Yeah.
You're supposed to represent everyone. This party line stuff's silly. You know, one thing I was thinking about the other day is that we're having a very difficult time. Excuse me. We're having a very difficult time convincing young people today that this country was founded with good reasons, it's found with good principles, it's found on a solid premise of being good people and doing what we should, it's found on freedoms, you know, and that's something that we really want young people to understand, what our founding was, and that we've been a good nation, we've done great things. My word, we're still the greatest charitable nation in the world and always have been. When there's an emergency in the world, the Americans are the first ones in there helping people. And so many other things that happen. We have more freedom than anybody in the world. Where else in the world can you be born and in poverty and grow up to be a president or grow up to be a surgeon or grow up to be, you know, it just doesn't happen. We are a great nation. However, if we're trying to convince them of this, we're doing a very poor job when they're looking at our government and saying, these guys are exactly who.
Well, you know, but I think that's one of the there are, if we look in, let's say we would look right now in on France or the United Kingdom or China or any of these other places that we do keep somewhat, Russia, you know, the one great thing that differs about our government nationally than their governments, and we can look at all their governments and see people fighting. It happened.
Oh, absolutely.
And we see people killed in other countries.
Is it Taiwan where they go over top of the desk at each other and throw shoes?
Well, and watch Parliament sometimes. If you want to see a real argument, watch Parliament. But one thing our country has that, to a degree, no other country has is the ability to speak out against your government with no consequence.
No consequence.
As long as you don't threaten their life, there is no consequence. And that's the difference. And sometimes it does work to not to our advantage, because we do complain. And we do say, darn this country and darn that decision. But you know what? We're the only country that has the right to do that freely.
So here we have this problem. We have this problem of our politicians voting down party lines.
Oh, yeah.
And with that being said, what do you do about it? Locally, I mean, let's leave the federal out of it. We can't do anything there right now either. Other than when it's time to go to the polls and we vote for a congressman or you know. But locally, you know, what can we do? The same thing. I mean, you can actually, you know, people can say, you know, we're tired of this. You're going to work together. And if you're voting down party lines, you all need to go. And actually carry through with the threat. You know, every year I see these, whenever election's coming up, and I see people posting things, and even signs that will say, throw the bums out. Throw them all out if they're not going to work for us. But the truth is, no one ever follows through on that. They just, that's just a good thing to make them feel good.
Well, I've always said this locally. And you know what? Nationally, you couldn't do it, but you could do it locally. It's very hard, once the cat's out of the bag, to put the cat back in the bag. But what you could do to cut this off, and it would have to be a long process, but you'd eventually get there. I don't understand what party has to do with local elections. So when you vote, take the party affiliation off the ballot. And then you'll get some real people in the office, because you're going to have to know that person. You're going to have to know something about that person. You're not going to be able to go in and say, well, I don't know anybody for township trustee, so I'm just going to vote the R. You can't do that anymore. It's going
to
be...
I've often said that I think a good thing, Scott, would be for people to, you know, first of all, take the debates off the stages. Take the debates off. Take all the slick advertising off, and let everybody that is a registered voter get in the mail a statement, a platform of that candidate, what they feel, what they believe, and how they're going to vote, and that's all they get. And then those people read those things, and it's up to them, and then vote on your candidate, because quite frankly, our debates are staged. I mean, they are all... I mean, they work. I mean, look at them. They put them in sequester, and they work on them. You're going to give this answer, and this is how you're going to react. I don't want that. I want two people talking together and with honest opinions, but you're not going to get that.
Well, you know what? The local debates, because I've moderated four or five of them, you know, that's still one of the places I think it does work.
Yeah, it does.
Because they get no prep. They don't even tell you who the Democrat and Republican are. If you're in the audience or listening on radio, I don't even know the questions. They give me the questions as they come in. That's a League of Women Voters thing. When the League of Women Voters lost the national election, because the parties, again, that's one thing the parties did get together on, throwing the League of Women Voters out. They got together on that one so they could control it.
Some of the questions in the federal, nationally, are like, give me a break. You know, let's get down to some serious stuff about where it really affects us as Americans, you know, and... But no, I think locally, I can see, because first of all, locally, the candidates don't have the kind of money and power that it takes to get people to gear them up for all this stuff, and it's just not something they're going to do. There's typically not that much money in a local election.
Well, and the one thing I like about the local debates is everybody's included, and a lot of times the 5th Ward City Council doesn't get the attention of a mayoral debate or mayoral election, but you know what, when they're all there, if you're interested in the mayor election, then you're also going to hear about the Fifth Ward, because it all happens at the same time.
Well, let me ask you a question then. If locally we're not dealing with the struggles that we are nationally, as far as that goes, if we can get an honest debate, a more honest debate between people, and if people are more concerned about what's going on locally, why are we still voting down party lines locally?
Well, I think locally what happened was the clubs. I think that if you notice in it, I'll just speak to Marion because that's where we are. Democrats don't do very well in Marion County. You just look at the seats locally, and that's the way it is. But Democrats do well in off-year elections. Now, why is that? Well, the best guess I can get, if you go back and look at the things, when we vote for governor, almost everybody who vote, when DeWine won, a Republican, if you look at all the local elections that year, all the local Republicans won by about that amount.
Right.
When you look at the president, when we vote for president, all the people who voted for Trump voted for the local Republicans. But in the off year, there's no trickle down. So, and I guess in the off years, you really do go vote for the local officials.
It's an interesting point.
Yeah.
Interesting way to look. I think people do just go many times into a booth and they vote straight down the party line. But then I think sometimes, I think that our parties become very polarized. We just had, there was just a vote in the House. Was that yesterday? The vote on the infrastructure bill. And there were some things taken out of that that I don't understand why some of the people, the Democrats voted completely down party lines on that, completely, 100%. And I know there were some Democrats in that mix that did not agree with some of the stuff that was going on, but I think the pressure is so great by those around them that they don't want to take the heat. And I wish there was a way, honestly, maybe you do it through shorter terms, through term limits, but I wish there was a way to take the power out of it. And the problem is, I think that when people, and we see this with people, period, that when people are put in a position of power, it's dangerous. And it can be very dangerous, and it's addicting. It's almost like a drug. And they do not want to give up that power no matter what it is. And I think that if they think, if I stand against those that are voting this way, you know, I'm going to be the next one that they're going to, when tough times come, they're not going to stand with me. I'm out of here.
But you know, this is an interesting point, and it's not just in politics. We see it a lot there now, too. But do you remember when people in entertainment, sports figures, coaches, and politicians retired when they were still at the top of their game? They didn't cling. Now we've got this thing where you stay until they throw you out.
You know what I think a lot of it is? I'm going back to my pastoral roots here. I think a lot of it is that there was a time, I think, when people were satisfied with their lives. And I think there was a time when people could take great satisfaction in what they had. And their lives were okay without it. I know as a Christian that the day that I'm not in the pulpit anymore, I'll be just fine. But I think today, all people are clinging to is what makes them feel good and what makes them feel like they are somebody. And they cling to that to the very, very end. I mean, you see it. You see it all the time with people that just will not let go of stuff. And of an office, of a job, of a position, or whatever it is. And they've got to have that attention drawn to them. And it's really sad because it tells me that they're not secure in themselves.
Well, it's funny because my rubric for this position, because it is it's a public position, has always been not age. It's not based in anything except the fact that I know there will be a day when I am no longer at the top of my game. You become, the older you get, you're not as interested in what's going on younger. When you do something for a long time, you feel like you've asked every question. And you want to do other things. You know, I don't have to die at the microphone. There's no law that says I have to do that. And you know, Johnny Carson had a great saying once. He said to his producer one time, he said, come to me when I am no longer at the top of my game. And then he said, once I leave, remind me not to come back. And
good
I think
point.
That's it.
And I feel the same way as, now, I don't think that I'll ever, because of who I am, and I believe whose I am, I will never stop being in the service of God doing something.
Right.
But the day will come when I know that I can't be in that pulpit anymore. I'm not effective. I'm not whatever that case may be. And if I don't know it, there will be those that I'm sure will remind me.
You need those people.
You do need those people. And that is a time when you step aside and say, okay, my tenure is past.
Well, then you leave what you did. Your body of work is whole. You know, you did the best you could, and when you left, and you could enjoy leaving. Retirement parties used to be happy. Well, they don't have them anymore because you stay till you drop, or an illness hits you.
Now, I will say, I'm 63, and I don't see myself stopping anytime soon, but I'll be honest with you, a year from now, who's to say my mental status is different, and I would be thinking differently.
But you know what? Just conversely, so I make this point, you know, there are 80-year-olds who do
Absolutely.
This job very well, Absolutely. And they shouldn't leave.
Paul Harvey.
Absolutely. Well, Charlie was here till he was 85,
mm-hmm.
and he should have done that. He was, people liked him, and he liked doing it. But that's just, it's age is not the rubric.
It's, no, it's about, it's where you're at.
Yeah.
It's where you're at, and you know, that's something that I think we all have to recognize. But just because you stop doing what you've been doing doesn't mean there's not a door open for something else to do and do effectively.
That's right.
You know,
it's interesting. You know, if you're obviously a pastor or you're in radio or whatever you're doing, just because you're not on the air or preaching the sermon every Sunday doesn't mean you still can't be involved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's okay to turn over power. And management. You know, it's okay to, you know, what is it? I don't want to drive the bus. I just want to ride the bus.
Yeah.
At some point, you need to become a rider.
Sometimes, yeah, exactly. And I think that can be a great time for many people.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, I had a pastor growing up that, if I'm not mistaken, I think he was in his early 60s when he just decided that, you know, I think it's time to not do this anymore. And he took over some other positions and things he did in other places. But he recognized, you know, it's time to stop and smell the roses a little bit and see what leads next. And I think that's a really important thing to do. But I think that we can, I think we need to stop worrying about circumstances on our outside dictating how we view life and how we view tomorrow. We do have this continuing saga of the pandemic, but it doesn't define me, and it shouldn't define you or anyone else, and it shouldn't define what we think of our future. We are so afraid today as people. I just don't see the security out there that we used to see in people. A friend of mine, Ted, wouldn't mind me telling you this. A friend of mine, Ted, was just diagnosed with cancer, very treatable cancer, which they're getting ready to treat right away. And we were talking, and he said to me, he said, you know, he said, here's the way it is. He said, the doctor's given me a good prognosis. He said, I'm probably going to live a long, healthy life if I do this. He said, but if I don't, I don't. And if I don't, he said, I know where I'm going when I die. He said, you know, evidently God will be finished with what I'm doing here, and that'll be the way that'll be. What a good attitude to have, because it's far easier to go into treatment with a positive attitude. Fear is physically debilitating, and so many people live in such a state of fear. I know a particular lady that is so afraid of COVID that every time I see her, she's got a mask on and she shies away from people like it's this great boogeyman that's going to come and get her. Hey, look, either she's going to get it or she's not. She's probably been exposed to it 20 times anyway. And hey, if you want to wear a mask and do that stuff, that's fine. Take whatever precautions you want. But don't live in fear with it. Don't let that fear take you over. And so many people do. Don't be afraid of, is my company going to close down? You know what? If it does, it does. And we can't control that. So the truth of the matter is, prepare to do the best you can with what you have. Put yourself in a position that maybe if things get rough for a couple months, maybe you can try to pay some things. I know so many people, and Scott, you've seen it, Frank, you've seen it, when all that stimulus money came out, I saw the trash in front of people's houses. There were way too many big screen TVs and other things going up. And it was like, folks, you know, this stimulus was not so that you could go out and buy extra things. It was to help you get through a difficult time. And, you know, we've talked about putting that money back and what you do with it. I know one lady that when she gets her tax money every year, and because she was telling me this, she has several kids, and she's a single mom, so she gets this huge earned income credit every year. So at tax time, she gets several thousand dollars, quite a bit. You know what she does with it? She goes to her landlord and pays her rent for an entire year. She didn't worry about rent for 12 months.
Do you ever wonder where that money goes, though? Because I hear people complain about money not having it all year round. They have jobs, 40-hour-a-week jobs, and then they get thousands of dollars if you have kids. Now, I'm not saying it's not expensive to raise kids if you're a single parent, but within 3 or 4 months, these thousands of dollars are all gone.
I know where it goes, because I've known many of these families, and it goes to electronics. A huge part goes to electronics.
But can you imagine?
It goes to new tattoos, which are quite expensive.
Oh, you know, that's an interesting thing. Where is that fascination?
I don't know. I don't know. But I'll tell you, every time that it's that time of year, I'll see these families, and they got a whole new sleeve or calf, or if they
got a good business to be in.
If they got room left, but the point is, they do that, and then, you know, still that huge bill with the electric companies hanging out there. And it's like, folks, come on, you know, let's ease your mind, ease your life, just pay these bills and get them done.
But don't you have any, it's not even responsibility. Don't you just, I mean, boy, to fork out $1,000, that takes a lot for me to do that. Just as a human being, it seems like it doesn't even cross people's mind. Oh, here's $1,000. Okay.
No, because I don't think anyone has ever really taught them that they need to budget and what blessing comes with budgeting. And there is a blessing with budgeting because you're not sweating next month. You know, another thing, and it's really interesting, I know we've talked about this before, is that we were talking about it the other day. I was with a fella that a pack of cigarettes now averages $7. Well, I think $7's the bottom line. You can't find them cheaper than $7. And if you're smoking two packs a day, that's 14. If you've got a spouse or someone else in your house that smokes like that, you're now at $28 a day. Every 10 days, that's $280. You realize that? Every month, that would be what? $810. $810 a month for a two pack a day habit for two people. $810. Now, I have not talked about Pepsi and beer, or I've got to have my weed every month, or whatever the case is. And then same people come back and say, it's not fair, we don't have any money, or we can't afford to pay this. I'm sorry, those are not necessities. They're habits. They're bad habits, but they're not necessities. And for me to feel like I have to have sympathy for you because you can't pay your rent, when you're doing something that is totally unnecessary and spending that kind of money, it makes no sense to me. And I don't know what the argument is back on that one either. What's your comeback on that? Honestly, I can't pay, you know, A, B, and C, but sorry, landlord, I don't have $700 a month for the rent, but I just spent $810 on cigarettes this month. You know, what's the landlord to think? And I think that people at some point have to really examine their own personal responsibility. And they also have to realize how much better they'll feel if they begin to take some of that and budget some of that and put it back for that. It's hard to get people to even budget. I know that in our ministerial association, we made a rule one time that anybody that needed money from the ministerial association, we would give them up to X amount of dollars towards a utility or whatever. But they had to be willing to sit down with a lady that free of charge was going to do a budget with them. And that was like pulling teeth. They weren't going to do it. We said, you know, we can't force you to do it, but don't come back next year because we're going to see you didn't do it and you're going to be ineligible. They didn't care. They didn't want to do a budget. And her budget was very sensible. I loved what she had done with cigarettes because she laid out this thing where every week they took one cigarette away from their pack. And they put it in a separate thing for down the road. And they weaned themselves down by one cigarette a month so that at the end of this period of time, and once all the reserve was gone, they'd eventually be down to, at some point, like 2 cigarettes a day or 1 cigarette a day. And it was a sensible way to do this, and it gave them a goal to shoot at. But some of those things, but they weren't willing to do that at all. You know, this makes me comfortable, this is what I want to do, and I'm not going to do anything different. And it's the same thing with other things that are done. I don't know what the answer is to get through to people to make that change. I mean, I talk to people all the time about the benefits of coming to a local church and having that church family that's there to love you and support you and be there when you are in the hospital or be there when you do need something or there's a tragedy in your home. It's such an important thing, but yet, no, I don't want to be bothered because that's just going to take up my time and they might expect something of me I don't want to do. And the other problem is because so many of the churches have been willing to go out and reach outside, they know that if they have a tragedy and call a church, they're going to be there anyway. They're going to come out and help in an emergency situation anyway. So why should they waste their time getting out of bed on a Sunday morning and coming to church? But I think they're missing out so much.
But you know, there was a time when people did not know where to go for help. And it's been in the recent time. I'd say before the year 2000, there was help, but you know, the normal middle-class family, if they hit hard times, somebody lost a job or something like that, they did not go to the welfare office. They had a bad Christmas. They had a bad Thanksgiving.
1981, we hit a recession, and I was doing construction work, and it stopped. And at that time, I had 3 kids. I was just barely 21 years old, and had 3 kids already. And I remember it never entered my mind to go to a social office for help. I started cutting firewood with somebody that I got a very small percentage of what we were doing a day. When it is embarrassing as it kind of was, when it snowed that winter, I was knocking on doors, shoveling driveways, even seeing some of the people I'd gone to school with, hey, can I shovel your drive for 50 cents? But you know what? I had a responsibility, and that's what I did. And people need to be willing to do that. I think that the help has been so much of it out there. I had a guy stop on the garbage truck one day, and he was going to chew me out because he thought we were the pantry that was given out way more than what people needed, and at the time we weren't. But he was mad because he was seeing all this good food in people's garbage cans, steaks and roasts and all this stuff that they were given so much they weren't even using it. And I know one particular lady would take the meat that she would get at the pantry, and it was winter time, so rather than buy cat food, she'd just throw it outside and let the cats chew on the frozen meat. So sometimes we have an overabundance of things. I'll tell you, the reason that we tapered our clothing pantry down to real needs, right? We've had a table out for 2 days out in front of the church for people with sandals and things they need. That's a wonderful thing to do. And we help people in emergencies with fires, with whatever. And if someone calls with a real need, we'll meet it. But for a long time, we had a clothing pantry once a week that people would come to. And Scott, do you know what we found people were doing? They were leaving with bags of clothes and having a yard sale that weekend. It had nothing to do with clothing themselves. They were selling them in yard sales. And we had several reports of this and checked out ourselves. And sure enough, they were taking the best of the best and going out and having yard sales. And that was not the intent of what we were doing. So I think that we, in this discussion this morning, it's gone all over the place. I think that we have a lot of issues to look at, but I think a lot of it really comes back to who we want to be in our lives and where that personal responsibility lies. And do we truly want to better our lives and better ourselves, or are we just looking to get by every day and keep everything the status quo? And the sad thing about that is there's no such thing as the status quo. Anytime you plateau, you eventually go backwards. And that would be my final statement.
Again, this show can be heard live every Friday morning at 11:10 a.m., repeats on Sunday morning at 8:10 a.m., and Wednesdays at 3:10 p.m. Check out the website, wwgh1071.com. Go to Program Archives and search The Pastor Spot. It is the first show. You can go back and listen to programs from March of 2018 on, and the Community Christian Fellowship Sunday service airs on this station every Sunday at 12:15 p.m. every week, so don't miss that. Now, do remember that you can listen live to this station on the internet, wwgh1071.com, or you can download the free TuneIn app on any mobile device. Search WWGH, and you can listen anywhere in the world.
Thank you, Scott. God bless you all.
Listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, LP, Marion, Ohio, the talking place. The legendary star of The Facts of Life, Charlotte Ray, Mrs. Garrett.
Yeah. Is it how much of Mrs. Garrett is in Charlotte Ray?
I'm not, you know, they made Mrs. Garrett perfect, which was ridiculous, as I wrote in the book. I mean, they never